Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier. I am back in Los Angeles, and joining me, as he always will on Tuesdays, he is Kevin O'Connor. KOC, good to see you, man.
Great to see you back here from your East Coast trip, live show. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. It was great to go home to North Carolina. My family was very happy. I had a great weekend, Kevin. I got to play Pinehurst No. 2, great golf course. Got to have the live show at the Carolina Theater in Durham on Friday, and then North Carolina beat Duke on Saturday. I was 3 for 3. I expected to go maybe 1 for 3, 2 for 3, 3 for 3. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I'm too happy. Someone's going to have to come humble me soon, and I'm sure they will.
Make it 4 for 4 today.
Yeah, let's do our best. Let's see what happens. Let's do what's trending in basketball, because there is a top trend here and something that you've been focusing on. We've been talking about the Milwaukee Bucks. A lot of transition this year, a lot of changes, a lot of trying to figure things out. And one of the biggest things is Dame Lillard. That's a big topic of conversation. And you have seen some good signs moving in the right direction for Dame.
Well, on Sunday against the Clippers, granted, L.A. is without Paul George, without Kawhi Leonard, so they were limited. But Damian Lillard, 35 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds, one of his more complete games that he's ever had. And what was interesting in this game was something that's been trending up for them in recent weeks. Dame's averaging 25 points per game since the All-Star break, 42.4% from three, 7.6 assists per game. Throughout the entire season, right, they have not run a ton of Giannis Dame two-man game stuff. Mm-hmm. Handoffs, pick and rolls, it's trended up under Doc Rivers. They ran a season high against the Clippers with 28 pick and rolls in that game, up from a previous high of 21. And that was notable because in that fourth quarter, they ran it over and over and over again, getting different buckets, Brook Lopez spot up threes, mm-hmm. Dame creating, hitting Giannis on passes. They ran it over and over. And after that game, they talked about it. Dame was asked about it. Giannis was asked about it. And they said that they have been running 2-on-0 in practice, where Doc Rivers has them on the side of a court by themselves, just practicing, passing the ball back and forth to each other, running different sets from different angles. Mm. And so I think we're seeing that chemistry start to build. We saw it against the Clippers. And for the Milwaukee Bucks, their defense has trended up. Their offense has been great all year, but getting that Dame and Giannis two-man game is going over the course of the year. That's going to be what they're going to be turning to in endgame situations, and that's what could propel them to a championship.
Yeah, and it's a pick-your-poison type of situation. Do you want to deal with Giannis rim-running, or do you want to deal with Dame from the outside? I mean, it is a tough decision to make, and Dame looks more comfortable. He looks a little bit happier. Obviously, there was the Miami factor in a lot of this. A lot of people were wondering if he wanted to be in Milwaukee. It does feel like things are turning in the right direction. Maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into the body language, but it does look better. I don't know if it is better, but it looks better.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. It looks better. And that stat that I mentioned, the 28 pick and rolls, that's via Sports Radar. And with them, I would expect them to exceed that number again. Mm-hmm. I just don't see any reason why, as they're building this chemistry and things are looking better, as you said, why you just don't keep turning to that more, especially in close games. They're running that on the left side of the floor at the end of the game. I think we're going to see them show different wrinkles. Maybe at some point we even see Dame setting a screen for Giannis mm-hmm. more often. Giannis is the guy going downhill with Dame flaring out 4 or 3. Maybe we see different wrinkles over the course of time. They did run a lot of dribble handoffs in that game as well, with Giannis just simply handing the ball off to Dame at the perimeter. So I think with those two, the big question come playoff time for the Bucks will be, can they make the necessary adjustments? Can Doc Rivers make those adjustments like in the playoffs with Joel Embiid and James Harden in past years? Mm-hmm. Defenses would switch that. Doc didn't have the right adjustments. Can Dame and Giannis and Doc collectively adjust? Can they improvise like Jokic and Murray do with their two-man game that's unstoppable? So there's still questions to be had, but it is absolutely trending up, and I view that as a very positive sign for the Bucks.
And it's encouraging that they're working on that two-man game, because I had heard a lot of people talking about, well, they're saving that for the playoffs. Well, if you've never done it before, there's nothing really to fall back on. So I mean,
you get live reps, Tate.
Yeah, you got to get reps. Yeah, that was some of the best advice I got in my career. Bill Simmons told me that. It's like, you got to get reps. That's all
it's
it
true.
Is. I want to tell you about my top trend. At the early in the season, Wembanyama, he had this quote. He said, "The biggest thing I've learned, talking about getting to the NBA, is a 20-point lead is nothing." And it does feel like in the NBA, if you watch games in the regular season, that you could be watching in the second quarter and it's 48-18. I can pack it up. I'm done. And then you look at the final mm-hmm. score, box score afterwards, and it's like, oh, my God, they actually lost that game. Have we ever seen swings like this from scoring? And do we think with the defensive intensity picking up that this may go away? We might get back to more normal, 10-point leads or the new 20-point leads.
It is going to be interesting to see if we don't see quite as many as those massive comebacks over the course of the year, because they're not blowing the whistle quite as much. But still, like, if you have a – like we saw with Cleveland last week against Boston, with Max Strus just going off and hitting a ton of threes at the end of the game, you could still have a massive 22-point comeback in the fourth quarter alone just by hitting threes.
And I guess that's what it comes down to. It does, you know, it's the variance from the three-point line, and that's why it's so different than it used to be in the past. But there's still some moments where I have to do the double take, and I'm like, how is this even possible? And it turns out that Wembanyama has the exact same feeling. So maybe in the future the league likes Wembanyama, so maybe in the future they take care of him and make sure these 20-point leads don't get lost so quickly. Let's turn to our superlatives. We love doing superlatives. We do our weekly awards here on the show. This week, your superlative is concern of the week, the KOC concern of the week. What is your big concern?
Well, the Clippers are 7-7 in their last 14 games after they were just absolutely stellar to begin their run with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and James Harden. We did see Kawhi and Paul George both miss Sunday's game. James Harden also dealing with a core injury right now. So you got a lot of those guys who are older, up in minutes in their careers, who are not load managing this year at the point where they are near highs in games played and minutes played for the first time in 4 or 5 years. And so I think with the Clippers, I'm at a point right now where they're 7-7 in the last 14. Their three-point percentage has plummeted as a team, particularly from Kawhi right now with the way he's performing. Is this them hitting a wall? Is this going to continue and they are not contenders? Or is this them kind of just, okay, we're a top four seed.
We're in position to be
in
position.
We're in position. We can relax a little bit now and not go full throttle like we were just a couple of months ago. So I'm not overly concerned, but I'm mildly concerned.
And these are two guys that have been sort of the poster boys of the rest, approach. You know what I mean? The game, kind of dictates them to be able to, you know, play when they want to play, so to speak. Like, they can pick their spots. If this is them picking their spots and Joe Dumars catches wind of this, or anybody else in the league office, like, could this be bad, you know, for the load management crowd? Could this be a whole nother cycle and a whole nother news cycle where we're talking about that again with this Clippers team?
I mean, I think it's different with Kawhi, with his injury history and his age. I don't think so necessarily.
When Kawhi's healthy, he plays. And I think there's been a prevailing narrative that he's like making some sort of distinct choice. I don't think it's that.
Sure, but like when you're shooting below, 23-24% from three, when you were just a 40%+ guy prior, I do wonder, are these injuries affecting his performance? Same thing with James Harden. He begins the season with his first 10-12 games with the Clippers. He doesn't have his burst. He's getting it back. And then he becomes, oh, wow, looks like top 25 player James Harden.
Yeah.
Right now he's looking more like the guy at the beginning of the season with his burst and his athleticism on drives to the basket. So I think with all three of their stars, isn't that always the question with the Clippers?
Mm-hmm.
What's their health going to be? Well, if this is what the team is going to look like in the playoffs, they won't get past round one. And that's where the level of concern is. You're not panicking, but you're concerned with this team. And I hope at some point in the coming weeks, maybe starting later this week with their big game against Minnesota, that they start to get that back, because they were looking like a true finals contender, a real threat to go toe-to-toe with Denver.
Yeah, and you were saying most games Kawhi's played, right, since 2019, and then most games that Paul George has played since 2020. So
unbelievable, right?
Yeah, right. Four years and 5 years. I mean, your body probably has. You talked about that wall. I mean, it's like you got to get that second win. So
it's a lot of games left.
Right. It's a lot of games left. I mean,
we got over a month to go, and then playoffs right around the corner.
Right, and then they're playing the Wolves. So, I mean, that'll be a good litmus test to kind of see where they are without these guys. Mm-hmm. And the Wolves, I mean, even though they just lost to the Lakers, obviously, you know, one of the best teams in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there you go. We got one superlative down, the concern of the week. Now let's do the stat of the week. Anthony Davis. I just see these first player to ever do this in NBA history. I feel like every other day. So I just always like have to do like a little fact check myself. But Anthony Davis, first player in NBA history to record 25 points, 25 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 steals in a game. Were you shocked to see he was the first guy to do that? And how impressive has Anthony Davis been lately?
I mean, it was shocking for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Anthony Davis, the way he has performed defensively this year, it's almost a shame that he's unlikely to win Defensive Player of the Year,
right,
considering how great Rudy Gobert has been manning the number one defense in basketball with Minnesota.
Rudy's in trouble right now, by the way.
For sure, yes. Yeah. So you got to find $100,000 for a little money sign.
Yeah, it's not good.
And then Victor Wembanyama, I mean, granted the Spurs are not a great team defense. They are with him on the floor, and he gets a lot of hype too. And yet, 80 once again. He spends years in New Orleans. The team is average, below average, to crappy at times.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the Lakers, there's just other guys who are better candidates. And he's putting up these amazing defensive performances where he's switching onto the perimeter, just locking down the paint, getting five steals, 25-plus rebounds. He's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
All year long, all the criticism about AD on offense, where you're like, oh, he doesn't bring it every night. He brings it every night on defense. And it's disappointing that he's probably not going to win a defensive player of the year. He may never, considering Wemby will be even better next year. So AD, he's on the board. He's on my radar for defensive player of the year. But he's not the favorite right now ahead of Gobert for me.
Well, he got the stat of the week, and my exterminator that came to my house, he does AD's house. He told me he had the best house in the Lakers. So
oh, yeah. Wow.
I was like, I don't know why he's giving me this information, but I had just seen this AD stat, and I was like, shout out to you.
He doesn't need a trophy in there for it to be the best house.
He's got a great house. I mean, Celtics better than LeBron's. Next superlative, last one, we got start of the week, G.G. Jackson, who is a rookie for the Memphis Grizzlies. 30 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 block, 10 for 19 from the field. That's 53% if you're doing the math. What a game. And what a first start for G.G. Jackson. This is a guy who was the number one player in his class. A lot of people thought he might be, you know, top 5 pick. Doesn't go that way. Struggles in South Carolina, but it looks like he's figuring it out down there in Memphis.
Chris Vernon, my co-host with the mismatch, is doing cartwheels somewhere.
Woo!
Out of sheer excitement.
Kevon!
Kevon! Yeah, but yeah, Verno's, we've talked about G.G. a little bit this year, and I think I'm curious about, like, your perspective with him. He struggled so much in college,
mm-hmm.
and then he goes to Memphis, this great situation in the NBA that's had good player development, and a guy who was a top pick, a top high school recruit. He was number one in his class before he reclassified, struggles in college, and now look at him. How do guys kind of develop in this weird non-linear way? Like, he's a great example of that.
Yeah, and Lamont Paris is up for coach of the year in college basketball, his coach last year, so it's not like it was a coaching issue that he mm-hmm. had going on. I just think
there's a Gigi issue FaceTiming about his or like doing Instagram lives about
right.
his coach during the season.
Exactly. I think there was just a lot of probably immaturity and probably an expectation of getting a certain amount of shots, and these are things that happen when you're the number one mm-hmm. guy on your team and your Team USA is kind of a little golden boy for the future, you know what I mean? I think that kind of played into it a little bit, but he goes down to Memphis. He works hard. It
Absolutely.
Is the perfect place, I think, for him to go. And now he's using that talent to get that next level. I heard him tell a story about his first day at practice, and he was like, these guys are killing me. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And it really humbled him. And I think when he was in South Carolina, he didn't have that either. His natural talents could, you know, stand above everybody else. So
totally.
And Brandon Miller, by the way, I think was the first time when he played at South Carolina where G.G. was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
There's levels to this mm-hmm. game. And
that was the Brandon Miller game.
That was the Brandon Miller game. That's when you saw the light, and thank God you did, and thank God he's in Charlotte. let's look at some of these Tuesday NBA games. First up, we got 76ers Knicks. They just played a 70-point game. The 76ers won 79-73. Do we think that they score in the 80s in this game?
God, I'd hope so.
I hope so, yeah.
I
kind of like seeing that score, though. I don't know why. I felt like the Pistons, like, from 04 or so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like to have an occasional low score, right? Mm-hmm. Like we had a two teams score in the 80s last week. We had two teams score in the 70s this past week. It's nice to see with the lower scoring. We see this occasionally, but we don't want too much of it. Not too much.
Yeah, let's look at the next game. We got the Pacers and the Thunder. This will be an interesting matchup. SGA versus Tyrese Halliburton. Halliburton has hit a little bit of a snag in this season post-injury. You got some stats for us here that we want to take a look at. But just in general, like, what's our concern level? You already did your concern of the week. How concerned are we with Tyrese Halliburton?
Well, I mean, he did have a hamstring injury in January. On January 8th, he was averaging 23.8 points per game on 16.9 shots, 40.3% from three. He was getting 7.2 minutes of possession time with the ball in his hands prior to that injury. Ever since then, 15.8 points per game on only 13.1 shots, 31% from three, so from 40% to 31% from three, and 5.9 minutes time of possession. So he's not touching the ball as much, he's not shooting the ball as much, and he's not shooting it as well when he does actually do it. And so I think with Indiana, he looked like a megastar in the making. Obviously, he's named an all-star, he was fantastic, and ever since the injury, the numbers have fallen off a cliff. I still think Tyrese Halliburton is one of the 10 to 15 best players in basketball, 20 best at worst. This injury is just the limiting factor here. He seems to be playing through it. I don't think he has quite the fluidity off the dribble that he did prior. I don't think this is just some cold streak. I believe it's due to the injury. So the level of concern is purely due to health rather than anything else.
Yeah, so when you can have it on health, I think you feel a little bit better about that. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, KOC is going to tell us about a new kid on the block and his top 50 prospects. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. I'm here with Kevin O'Connor and KOC. We are talking big boards. We're talking mock drafts. This is your time of the year. This is when things get good. Are you excited?
It's our time, Tate.
Yeah, it's true.
March Madness around the corner for you, conference tourneys, and a lot of draft scouting right now for me.
I wonder, you know, it does feel like this is the one time where college fans, NBA fans, we all come together, and as they watch the tournament, they try to, you know, forecast guys who are going to be future NBA stars. And I want to start with one of those guys. Who is high up on your draft board right now. In fact, if you did a mock draft, he's number one on the board, and that is Reed Sheppard out of Kentucky. And we're just tinkering with the idea of him being paired with Wimby, and we're having a lot of fun with this. What are your thoughts? What have you seen from Reed that you really like, and how high can he go? Can he even go number one? It seems like he could.
So I've got Reed Sheppard, freshman guard, 6'3", number two on my board, number one on our
mock draft
exercise this week. We had the Spurs with the number one pick. What did they do if they get the number one pick? And we paired him with Victor Wembanyama with Reed Sheppard.
I like it.
And I think with Reed Sheppard, we saw in that Saturday game against Tennessee, top five team in the nation. He hit 7 3-pointers, 27 total points. Reed Sheppard facilitating, driving, kicks, looking like a John Stockton out there.
Yeah, a little Stockton.
And so I think with
Great Sheppard, hands.
Sheppard is right now a 50% guy from the field, 50% from three, 85% from the line guy who doesn't make a lot of mistakes on the floor. His defense. The instincts, Tate, I don't think I've seen a guy in a long time that feels like they know what the offense is doing. It's like he's watching film of opponents and knows the moves that they're going to go to, knows the plays they're going to run. Mm-hmm. On top of the fact he's just a highly intelligent, instinctual player. So he's a flamethrower shooter who can pass, who can limit mistakes, who's clutch, and he's a great defender. I think he's a worthy top five guy at worst. I think he's going to be a good NBA player. He looks like a Fred VanVleet with a better jumper at worst.
Yeah.
And I think with him moving forward in the NBA, I look forward to seeing how he develops. And I think, I'll tell you what, if he makes a run this year in the tournament, if he has some more big games like he did against Tennessee, that's going to potentially propel them to a national championship, right? And also, maybe he completely cements himself as a top five guy, if not number one.
Yeah, I think he's got spotty senses. That's what I call it. He anticipates things very well. He's got great stick-em hands. The ball is just always feels secure with him, and he knows how to close out games. So, I mean, Reed Sheppard, there's a lot of things that are encouraging to see. One thing I will say as a college basketball guy, this guy should be playing at Kentucky. I know that you want him to go to the NBA, but I need more than one year. He's not a one-and-done guy, so I need him to come back. He's a Kentucky second-generation guy.
I'm very sorry.
You
come,
guys can't
please.
Take all of our good
please,
guys. You
please,
know what I mean?
Come to the NBA, Reed.
No.
Come here.
No.
You know what? Here's the thing with him, right? He's going to be a top 10 pick, right?
Yes.
And I think with him, this
Rick Pitino said he's a top 8 pick, which I thought that
was. He specified top 8.
Top 8. Very Bill Simmons of him.
I know,
like
top 11, right?
Yeah, right. It's good.
I think with Reed, like, he's the type of guy. I have him one to the Spurs. Mm-hmm. I don't think he goes one to the Pistons. I don't think he goes one to the Hornets.
Yeah, not a Troy Reaver guy.
Necessarily. I think this year's draft, what makes it so fun and what's so interesting, I think, with everybody's board, is it's going to be dependent on who ends up getting these picks.
Yeah.
And we'll see. We won't know till May.
And at the end of the day, Reed Sheppard is going to be a point guard. You mentioned Stockton. And that's what he translates to at the next level. So if there's any confusion there, I've seen some people talk about him as an off-ball guard, but I think he is going to be the point guard. Maybe he's a little combo there. So we like doing these little spotlights on some of these guys. And Devin Carter, recruited by Frank Martin at South Carolina, which is a very tough-nosed coach, so he's been able to deal with that. Goes to Providence. His coach, Ed Cooley, decided decides to leave and go to Georgetown. So he's been in situations that have not been the best type of situations, and he's been able to still succeed, still thrive, loves the game of basketball.
Still keeps getting better every year as a junior.
And a lot of times when you don't have the infrastructure, it's tough to do that. So I think that's very encouraging as well. And we're not sure about the tournament. You know what I mean? There's some conversation to be had. Probably needs to win the Big East tournament. So if you want to see Devin Carter, now is the time. Go watch Devin Carter play in the Big East tournament. And who knows? I mean, we've seen a lot of crazy things happen. 2021, Georgetown and Patrick Ewing won the Big East tournament. So anything is possible. Who knows? Maybe Providence makes a run and Devin Carter moves up even. How high could he go? I mean, is there a chance we could see him go like 6, 7? Or is 10, you know, kind of like the ceiling of what we expect? Well,
philosophically, with this draft, that's going to be the interesting thing. How many teams are drafting with a big home run swing in mind? Mm-hmm. Or are they going with a more conservative approach? Because with somebody like Reed Sheppard, he's a high floor player. Devin Carter is a high floor player. It's more about the perception of what do you think their ceiling is as a player. Sheppard, with his youth, I think he has a very high ceiling. Carter, he's 22 years old. He's a bit older. In theory, his ceiling is a bit lower.
But if you're one of those teams that's a contender, you're saying if we get this guy, we could actually play him in
right
a rotation.
Away.
Right.
And so there's so much value in that with these guys. Devin Carter, 22 years old, can come right in right away. He's smart, intelligent. He's got an NBA body. On a rookie deal, you get that guy for 4 years as a contributor with your rotation. That can be vital. And so I think with a lot of these guys, Dalton Knecht from Tennessee.
Let's talk about him, because Dalton Knecht, number 15 on the board here, 40 points this past weekend against Kentucky, did it in 36 minutes. He said that he compares himself and looks up to Kevin Durant. He's a pure scorer.
I love it.
He's gotten better as a defender playing for Rick Barnes and a Tennessee team that identifies as a defensive team. He's getting a little bit better, but not his calling card per se. But you talked about home run swings. I mean, there's a chance that you take this guy and he could end up being your second best. Who knows? Even your first best player. 6'6", got a great shot, and just has like a knack for scoring at every level.
So he compares himself to KD. In my draft guide, I have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Max Strus as his shades of comparison.
So he'd be KCP, insulted. Yeah, not quite KD.
He would be insulted by those. I mean it as a compliment. KCP is a championship level role player on the Nuggets, a vital piece on both ends of the floor for them. Max Strus, we just saw him shred the Celtics last week with three after three. He's a good hard-nosed defender. With Knecht, the offense is for real. Like, I have no doubts in my mind about Knecht as an offensive presence with what he can do. He can create over the course of the year. We've seen him pick up more creation responsibilities, not just a spot-up guy, not just a guy running off of screens. He's the guy initiating offense. Defensively is where the drawback is. I have him 15th on my board. If he were KCP on defense, if he were Strus on defense at this stage, he'd be top 10 without a doubt on my board, despite the fact he's 23 years old. I don't care about age as much. Like we just talked about, there's value in having a guy who can come in right away and contribute. And I believe Knecht can on offense. It's just a matter of when does he become somebody that is not a liability on defense, as he has been throughout the season at times for Tennessee. Do you think I may be overrating that defensive, you know, concern?
I think that he's going to be a lottery pick. I think after March Madness, he's going to move up. So having him at 15 right now, I think there's a world in which, you know, he gets up into like Corey Kispert range where he goes like 9, 10, somewhere in there. And I think he's just a really good player and he's really smart. And he went the hardest path to get to where he is. You know what I mean? This is a guy who's like JUCO, you know, D2, like the whole nine yards.
He's got the story.
Right.
He's got the moments. He's clutch, fearless. I mean, he has all those intangibles.
And he walks into a team that has a lot of tough dudes and has become the guy. And I think that also is something to keep an eye on, because there is a lot of veterans, Vescovy, Sakai Ziegler, Adu. I mean, there's a lot of talented guys on Tennessee that have been there. And the fact that he came in and they say, hey, you get all the shots. I mean, that says a lot. That means that they know something that we all are starting to witness ourselves, that he's really one of those guys.
I mean,
one of them ones, as they say,
yes.
KOC.
And how many times has he had those banger performances this year?
Oh, yeah. At Carolina. Yes. I mean, that was an incredible game. Ends up getting, like, hurt late in that game. But Kansas is the only time that he really struggled, and that was early in the season. And I feel like he was kind of getting adjusted to that level of high-level college basketball.
I mean, he's definitely a special offensive presence, and I think – KCP and Strus are compliments, but you know what? Yeah. I'm open to changing those shades of it. It is only March right now.
Yeah, shout out to DePaul and Max Strus. We love to see that. But I like this. Do you feel good about the top 50 being out? Like, is there anyone that you're like, man, I the more I see, I think he might sneak into my top 50. Is there anyone on the outside looking in?
I mean, I think there's plenty of guys where we don't have profiles for them up yet, and ultimately it's a long way to go. I'd like to get to, I think, 80, maybe 90 profiles. It's a deep year with guys who are draftable, and of course – some players are going to return, unfortunately for you, just not Reed Shepherd.
Yeah, Reed, come back. We need you. We need you, Reed. Kevin, where can we find all your work? We'll let you enjoy your Tuesday.
Over on The Mismatch every Tuesday and Friday, and the NBA Draft Guy can be found at theringer.com.
Yeah, he is Kevin O'Connor, and we will have him back on the show next week. Coming up after the break, we got Cousin Sal on the show to break down some ridiculous stuff happening in the world of sports and beyond. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Joining us now, he is first in our heart, but he's the second guest on the show. He's Cousin Sal. Sal, great to see you, man.
All right, hold on. Let me write this down. First in the heart, but second on the show. It's so bad at math. It's great to see you, buddy. Welcome back from North Carolina. Right. I know you hate going there, but now you're back in L.A., back in the rat race.
Back in the rat race, back in the studio, back with this basketball behind me, and, you know, we're having a good time here, and we get to play my favorite game now, Sal, so are you ready for some over-under reactions?
I'm ready. I studied hard this time, so yeah. It should be good.
I love it. You sound prepped. You sound prepared. Let's do it. Let's start with the first one. Kirk Cousins makes the Falcons. Yes, that's right. Kirk Cousins signed with the Atlanta Falcons, a Super Bowl contender. What say you, Sal, over or under reaction?
I don't know about that one. Let's go to the next one. We'll go back to that. No. I am prepared. Okay. Listen, what were you smoking in North Carolina today? He is not a Super Bowl contender. The Falcons are not. I'm going to say overreaction. This is a fine move for Atlanta, and I think a good destination as far as Kirk Cousins is concerned. Atlanta, before he came on, was a +130 favorite to win the division, and that number remained the same. So even after Baker was signed for $100 million, I know a lot of that is dependent on Tampa making the playoffs, the oddsmakers still feel like the Falcons have the best chance to improve a couple games and win the NFC South, your beloved NFC South. If that's enough to make them a Super Bowl contender, then maybe, but I wouldn't be overly excited about betting Atlanta at 14-1 for the conference or 30-1 for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think it makes him a playoff contender, not a Super Bowl contender. There's different levels to it. Next one, Russell Wilson, who just signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers, will lead the Steelers to the playoffs this season. Over or underreaction, Sal?
I'm going to say overreaction. Remember, they essentially took the Bengals spot this year because Joe Burrow didn't play most of the year. So I think that flip-flops. But I'll tell you today, I don't know a single Steelers fan who's excited about this signing. Basically, probably because it's saying that they gave up on the quarterback position for 2024. They're not going to pick in the top three. They're not going to trade up. They're giving up kind of on Kenny Pickett as far as I'm concerned. But also, even though personality-wise this isn't a good fit, I think he's a game manager type that the Steelers like. Just don't turn the ball over, run the ball, play defense. He had 26 touchdowns last year. I saw on FanDuel 25 or more get you +175 for Russ. So maybe something to look into.
Yeah, I like that value. And like you said, he had a better year last year than I think a lot of people give him credit for. Yeah. And not to mention his coach and ownership wanted to get rid of him during the season and wanted him not to play. So that's always tough. Next one, running backs are back in the NFL. In case you missed it, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, and Tony Pollard all just signed. Saquon Barkley signed for $37 million. They thought about unionizing last year, Sal, but it looks like the marketplace is course correcting a little bit. Over or under reaction?
A tiny bit. I'll say underreaction, but 3 for $37.5 million, a lot of incentive based in there. A franchise tag would have put him at about $12 million a year. It was 11 last year. Don't forget the cap went up, right? It's about 25, 23 million per team. So I'm not sure what it means exactly, but I would say there was a signing in there, kind of like a sneaky signing with the Giants, Devin Singletary, 3 years, $19.5 million. Of course, not guaranteed, but deals like that, Tate, make me think there is some loot in the running back market.
Yeah, congratulations to the running backs. It's a much brighter day than it was last year. It was dark times, so it's good to see.
Yeah.
Next one, the Chiefs are now the most hated team in America. What say you, Sal? Over or under reaction?
This is an overreaction. I saw this on this is based on X and how many negative comments there were for teams on X, and I think the Chiefs had 10,000 and the Cowboys had 9,200 or something. By the way, as a Cowboys fan, I take exception to this, Tate. I don't like this. I want to be part of the most hated team. I want to root for the most hated team, and I feel like the Travis Kelce, you know, the fact that they won the Super Bowl again, but also the Taylor Swift thing. I feel like CeeDee Lamb has to date like Olivia Rodriguez or something because the Jerry Jones cutaways are just not doing it enough.
Yeah, I think this is a smart move. Go into the celebrity pool, do your best, see what you can get there. And then you also had the Chiefs trying to take the moniker of America's team. I mean, I think there's a lot of beef that is brewing.
Shame on them.
Yeah, shame on them. You mentioned the most hated. How about the most hated player? I got another one for you here. Kyle Filipowski will be the most hated Duke player ever by the end of his college career. Over or under reaction?
I'm going to ask you what he has to do for this, because I feel like, you know, there's so many through the years. There's Grayson Allen, there's Bobby Hurley, there's Wojciechowski, and of course, Leitner is the gold standard. I think to pass Leitner, now you have a better grip on this than I do, being from Chapel Hill. I think he still has about 12 more flops and 3 more chest stomps before he can be considered the most devilish of Blue Devils. How say you?
Yeah, they asked him on College Game Day how, you know, what would it take to be the most hated, as if it's like a badge of honor, which I thought was very interesting to say the least. But I don't think he has a shot. Leitner went to 4 straight Final Fours, won 2 national championships, and obviously smiled with that wry, you know, grin the entire time and stepped on some people's chests along the way. So I think he had a long way to go. I don't even think he's close to Grayson Allen at this point. And I had him on my show, Sal. He told me he was a teddy bear. He didn't even want to be a
villain.
So.
Oh, all right. Well, teddy bears can bite. I don't know if you've seen it before. But the wry grin, I think, is the key. I think you don't get a scholarship unless you have that.
Yeah, you got to have a little sheepish grin there. So I'm going to give you one right now when I talk about this guy. Joe Lunardi is still the king of bracketology. Over or under reaction, Sal?
Joe Lunardi has, nice enough guy, I've had him on my podcast. He has personal momentum going for him, which is huge in this industry, Tate. I don't know if you know this. So as long as he himself doesn't point out that he sucks at this, that, you know, no one remembers if he picks 66 out of 68 or 56 out of 68. So I feel like Steve Kornacki is the same as the comp here, right? I feel like 10 elections from now, we won't know if Steve Kornacki sucks. So, yeah, Joe Lunardi, I still think the king, because no one's taken his crown.
Yeah, and he got bracketology into the Webster's dictionary. Right. It's an official word. I think that was a big thing for him. And even though he was ranked as like the 98th bracketologist and all the mini bracketologists, it doesn't matter because he's got the platform. And Joe Lunardi still continues to win. Last one, Sal. Jimmy Kimmel, your cousin, is the greatest host in the history of award shows. Over or under reaction, what say you?
I mean, this is like me asking you to comment on UNC Duke here.
Right.
I'm kind of biased here. Let me tell you something. I don't know. Go watch Jack Lemmon. Do yourself a favor, hosting in the 1948. Go watch. No, don't bother. I don't know. I wasn't around for the old ones. I feel like Jimmy was made in a lab. He was meant to do something like this. I'm there live, and I'm more nervous about this than he is. I think he has a great balance of funny, solid monologue, a little roasty, and then appears throughout the show with off-the-cuff comments and the bits. The John Cena bit was terrific. Jimmy's the GOAT, and I'm not just saying that because he let me live in his office for 3 years.
Yeah, no, it was the best. I enjoyed seeing him there, and it's nice when you have a host that knows what they're doing, knows how to steer the ship, and it was a refreshing feeling after we've seen some of the host jobs as of late with some of these award shows. So
that's right.
Good to see Jimmy Kimmel back in the saddle there.
He didn't throw the writers under the bus, which I think was a big mistake.
Yeah, he should have saved that bit for later. Maybe he could have done that with Al Pacino. He's like, the writers did not put this in. They blamed him. So there you go.
Al and his own writers. Yeah.
Had his own plan. Let's call the captain, who always has a plan. Let's do our Riverboat Question of the Week, which is a simple one, Sal. You were at all these parties last night. You were hobnobbing with Hollywood's elite. And the question was, what's the best hors d'oeuvre at a party or at an award show? And we got the numbers crunched here. Beef skewers, the favorite at 3-1. Shrimp cocktail, 5-1. Sliders, 10-1. The liver pate, 150-1. And the field at even odds. What say you, Sal? You just had this moment last night, so it's fresh on your mind.
Yeah, it's great. Sunday night was terrific. I mean, that's all I care about is the food. Like, my wife goes off and tries to find a picture with Ryan Gosling or try to get to second base with him, and I don't care. I'm just hounding the guys, bringing out the trays, and I don't know if they like me or not because they never get out of the – I know right where to stand to grab the seared tuna tacos from them, and then they have to reload the plate. But I'm gonna go field here, Tate, and I'm gonna say I had a pot pie Sunday night. Came right out, hot chicken mushrooms with a little bit of truffle oil in there, and it was just delightful. I'm gonna go with that in the field.
I think that's a great pick. I think the field is a good bet. I'm gonna go with sliders though here, just because you don't have anything left over, right? When you get a shrimp cocktail, you have the tail in your hand. When you get a skewer, you have the little stick in your hand. Like, and then I have trash in my hand. Then you're trying to walk around and find. But then when you find someone that has all the other actual food on the plate, you don't want to put trash on the plate. It's a whole ordeal. So anything where I can eat the thing. And it's done, and it's goodbye. I don't have any trash. I think that's a win. So I'll take sliders.
It's funny.
One
I'm the other way because I grab all the napkins the person's holding at once and just see what they try to do after that. I'm like, yeah.
You like to put it on them. I like that. I'm glad you got to enjoy your night, and I hope you had some good food.
Thank you, buddy.
And now you got a chance to set the lines. This is one of my favorite things. Sal's going to set some lines for us. What say you, Sal?
All right. How about total number of Pac-12 teams in the NCAA tournament? I set it at 2.5. I'm thinking, not a great swan song year for the Pac-12. Unlike football, basketball, you know, usually you can get like 6 teams in. Now I think it's around 2 or 3. Which way are you going?
Yeah, I mean, Arizona was – they had a chance to be a 1 seed. They lose at USC. That was not a great way to finish the Pac-12 season. The women's side of the Pac-12 has been great. So Arizona's in. Washington State's had a great year. Kyle Smith's done a great job. So they're in. That's 2. Colorado is right on the door. They're trying to knock to get in. We'll see how they do in the Pac-12 tournament. I'm going to say over. I think Colorado gets in. I think they get 3 teams in, and I think that's all they get in. But I still would take the over. So that's a good line at 2.5.
Let me show you something here, Tate. I don't know if you're impressed or not. This is, I put this together. Wait, where is it? Okay, there it is. Yeah, it's color coordinated. What's the matter with me? I lost my mind. Yeah, I don't know if you could see there. That's my pat. According to my calculations, Colorado at 22-9 and 13-7 in the conference is in with a win against Utah or ASU, whoever wins on Thursday. Are you impressed with my color coordinated rankings, Tate?
I love it.
Lenardi.
I love it so much. I think you should be the new Lenardi. I think you'd be better than 98th with the bracketology. Yeah, I think you're right.
Thanks, man. I go through like a dozen highlighters a year. I definitely should be. All right, Tate, back to your ACC. Which team is a better bet to make the tournament? FanDuel has Virginia at plus 140 or Wake Forest at plus 154. What do you think?
Wake Forest cannot handle success. That is the problem with this team. It continues to be. They love to be on the bubble. They love to argue with Joe Lunardi about being on the bubble. I think they're a very talented team. Efton Reed changed the dynamics of this team, but Virginia's third in the ACC. They have the pedigree. They've won a national championship. They got Tony Bennett. There's some rumblings it could be Tony's last year. Who knows how real that is, but I think the committee takes care of Virginia as long as they win one game in the tournament. So I would take Virginia there at plus 140.
And do you think the committee holds it against Wake Forest for storming the court against Duke, a team they were favored against? Like, all right, it looks like they celebrated enough. Good. Sit home and relax.
I think Seth Greenberg did this back in the day with Virginia Tech. It's like you never think you're in. You know what I mean? Even if Dick Vitale's yelling at you that you're going to make the tournament, it's never over until it's over. And when you slip up to a Notre Dame or a Georgia Tech, things can go sideways quickly. So Wake Forest I'm concerned. So Virginia's a safer bet, I think.
All right. Yeah, Dick Vitale would typically say 75 teams were in and a field of 64. So he had it good. All right, Indiana State, the Sycamores. I love this Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You've seen this guy, right? He's got the specs and everything. He's a gigantic man. Plus 194 to make the tournament. I thought they were in, Tate, and they lost to Drake. And so now it's like almost a 2-1 favorite to not make it. So which way do you think?
Yeah, I think they're going to make the tournament. I just think it's a long 7 days. They're going to have to wait while all these teams are making their bids or making their push to be in the last four in to be in Dayton. But at the end of the day, the committee, they kind of crowdsource their opinions on college basketball. I think they're going to see Robbie Avila and say to themselves, we need the rec specs in this tournament. It's good for the characters. It's good for the conversation. Good for the storylines. And Indiana State in the tournament, just with the Larry Bird connection, is good for everybody. So let's get him in. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Munch Madness. Munch Madness with Kareem in there. Yeah, I have a blue dot. I don't know if you could see by their name. So that's, I have them in. I don't know that that matters to the committee. But
I think it does.
All right, so I'm done.
Yeah, I like that. Sal set the lines for us. March Madness, best time of the year. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do some line look-aheads with Cousin Sal. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're here with Cousin Sal, and now it's time to do some line look ahead. Sal, are you excited for this? We got NBA to talk about.
Always excited because the line look behinds are always bad because I'm on the losing end most of the time. But just so looking ahead is favorable.
I like the future more than the past, nine times out of 10. So I think that sounds better. And let's start with two teams that are playing like they're from the past. The 76ers of the New York Knicks, they just had a game the other night that was in the 70s. So something to look out for here. So 76ers at the Knicks. Knicks minus 4.5 in this game. The total at 212.5. What do you like here, Sal? And do we have any plays for this game?
Well, Tate, first of all, I should say the D3 and I, this is the TNT game, the first TNT game, we're doing our race to 10,
which is great.
You bet on one team to score 10 points before the team you're betting against. It's actually quite simple. But the problem is, like you said, these teams score in the 70s. We could be there for half the quarter, which is not the spirit of the bet, Either way, we have the Knicks. They're 4.5 for the game. They're a slight, minus 120 to get to 10 first. By the way, we're doing this. You'll be there at Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club the first Thursday and Friday of the NCAA tournament, a week from Thursday and Friday. So that's going to be fun. As far as the game goes, I think the Knicks bounced back. They essentially had 60 points on Sunday. Pathetic. 26 for 80. I think they picked that up. I'll lay the points. I'm crazy, but I'm going to lay the 4.5.
Yeah, I like laying the 4.5, and I love the race of 10. I think it's I obviously talk about the race of 69 in college basketball, but the race of 10 is a lot more fun, and usually it gets solved pretty quickly, and a lot of times the team that wins the race of 10 doesn't even win the game, so you got a lot of variance there with how it goes. Let's track to the future.
Yeah, the race to 10 is, I'm sorry to cut you off, it's a little more kid-friendly than the race to 69. I know what you're trying to do there, Tate, but we keep it clean, race to 10. Kids are in. It's fun.
Yeah, let's get the kids in. That'll be good. let's track to the future and look at the 76ers, obviously trying to deal and weather the storm without Joel Embiid. To make the playoffs right now, yes, is minus 420. No, is plus 310. How do we feel about the 76ers? Is it worth taking a swing here with some value at no?
I try to make a case for no because that's a juicy number, plus 310. But if you bet the no, you're basically saying they're going to lose a game on Indiana and end up in that 7-10 slog and then lose two more games, right? So, but I think they're going to hold on to the six. They finish with the Spurs, Pistons, Magic, and Nets. Those are their last four games. So if they get into trouble, they could just step on the gas a little. So Embiid or not, I think they're staying at number six.
I was hoping you were going to talk me into no at plus 310, but I like that you were using some common sense there and getting me back to to equilibrium. next game, we got the Minnesota Timberwolves taking on the Clippers. Clippers hard to handicap right now with all the injuries going on. Just looking at this game with the T-Wolves and the Clippers, is it worth just taking the Timberwolves here just because of the injuries with the Clippers?
I am going to take the T-Wolves. They didn't look great against the Lakers Sunday night, but they've won 2 out of 3 in this series this year. This is, you know how it is. I think you track this better. This is their 4th of 6 on the road for Minnesota, but Edwards had 27 last time these two matched up. I think it's going to be a close game, and if Gobert could cut back on his expensive gestures to the refs, I think we see a good one. I'll take the points.
Yeah, he got fined $100,000 for that, which I thought was a little ironic, so that was good from the league. Let's track to the future here. Look at the Western Conference playoff number one seed. Right now, Denver is the favorite at plus 100. You get OKC at plus 115. Those two teams battling it out. Do you see any value between those two? Do you take Denver or do you take OKC?
I'm boring, Tate. I'm going to take Denver, the defending champs. Right. I think they get it going. If you can get them at even odds, it's fun. Maybe OKC slips in the last 18 games. They're one out in the loss column. Denver is 10 of 18 left at home, and they have 3 against San Antonio, so those should be freebies. Again, boring, but Jokic turns it on. Give me even odds.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, if you're getting any plus money on Denver, I think that's a good number at any level. So I like that. Next one, last one, the Milwaukee Bucks taking on the Sacramento Kings here. This is just an interesting game just because the Bucks have been playing a little bit better, but they're going up to Sacramento. Sacramento's trying to make a push for the play-in. How do we feel about this one? You think Sacramento can handle business at home? Can they light the beans, Sal?
Yeah, I think I'm going to take Sacramento, mostly because I'm rooting against the Bucks to have Cleveland to win that division. It's been flip-flopping all over the place, mainly because we don't know when the Bucks want to play defense and when they don't care at all. I think this is one of the games where they won't care going to Sacramento. So give me the Kings.
Yeah, I said light the bean. They are not going to light a big bean. This is going to be a beam that they're going to light. So I apologize if there was any confusion. They did not change their celebration. but let's track to the future here. Kings to make the West play-in, minus 180. Obviously not the best value there, but is it worth taking a swing and just saying, obviously, that's going to happen?
Not the best value at minus 180, but they're right there at number 7, right? So 7, 8, 9, 10 get you in the play-in. They're not falling to 11, right? Because they're 8 games ahead of Houston at this point. So with 18 left. Can they jump Phoenix? That's the question. Can they jump them to get to 6? I don't think so. Two of the last 3, they have a bunch against San Antonio and Charlotte. This is how I look at the schedules, Phoenix. And like I've said, they've won 2 out of the last 3. I think Sacramento's stuck at 7. I'm going to say they are a play-in team.
Yeah, I think they're a play-in team. I feel bad for the play-in teams that are the 7 and 8 seed because I feel like they get punished by having to deal with the Warriors and the Lakers at this point at 9 and 10. And we saw the Lakers last year go from the play-in to the Western Conference Finals. So if they get the chance, they can make things happen. AD playing some good basketball right now, so that's something to keep an eye on. Last thing, Sal, the Tate debate. I went down to Pinehurst number 2 down in North Carolina, and the debate is a simple question. Shooting good at home is better than shooting good in your current city. So I went back to North Carolina. I shot a 77 on Pinehurst number 2.
Wow.
Some of the best golf I've ever played in my life, Sal. And I'm not sure I want to play again, so I just wanted to see what you thought about this. Should I just hang it up and just tell people this story for the rest of my life? I don't need to play anymore.
I think so. Leave them wanting more. First of all, this is the wrong person to debate with. I get excited when I get the putt through the windmill on 3 shots. So you going home in front of your dad and everybody else, your brother, and putting it together. Yeah, you might as well end, right? You have a story for the ages. Or you know what? The great thing about golf is you could just lie and lie and lie and no one will know. And you could even almost become president of the United States that way.
You say you made however many hole-in-ones and things work out that way. So that's always good. We love to see that. Yeah, I think I finally made my dad proud, Sal. That was, it took 31 years.
Well, listen, he should be proud. And your birthday, you bring up the 31 years, is Wednesday. It is tomorrow by the time this airs. I am going to give you a free bet, a team to win the conference. I'm going to turn it in. We'll go halfsies on it. Who do you like? I mean, there's so many conferences. Which tournament winner are we picking right now? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
I'm going to go with Washington State plus 700 to win the Pac-12 tournament.
Ooh.
I'm going to go with the Cougs. I'm going to take a big swing. I just like that team, and I'm not sure how much of a run they're going to make in the actual tournament, but I feel like in the Pac-12 tournament, they can make some noise, and they're one of the 2 teams left in the Pac-12. You know, next year will be the Pac-2, so I feel like this could be a good one.
I'm putting that in for you. I like that. And they already beat Arizona this year, right?
So, yeah, twice.
Got a shot. Not afraid of anyone. That's right. They did beat them twice.
Right.
All right. Good job by you. Happy birthday, and thanks for having me on, albeit second. That's
yeah, fine. No, you're still number 1 in my heart, though. Don't forget about that. He's Cousin Sal. He's the best. Appreciate you coming on the show, Sal, and we'll see you next week.
You got it, pal. See ya. Happy birthday.